jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Let's get crazy. Welcome back to the Supercoach Coach podcast. This is the 10th season that we're doing it and that we're celebrating this year. My name's Marcus and I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. Good to be back.
Certainly is. We're on to the positional shows now. Last week was a bit of a first show back. We talked about first pick plays and this week straight into the positional shows, Mark. We've got four of these and then we've got the rookies and recap shows. Before we get into the show, I just want to mention again our Patreon page. So that's our platform that listeners can support the show with. We try and give back a little bit to that Patreon community. Last year, we did a team reveal before we went live with the season. I think that potentially helped a few of our listeners out as well, talking through the thought process of how we were selecting our teams for season 2017. So if you have up to a dollar to spare a week, keep in mind it's a US platform, so it's one US dollar, but from a dollar a week, you can support the show and you can cancel anytime. And we've had a few people sign up since we posted the first show, so thank you.
Nice. We definitely should have been charging Bitcoin, mate.
Yeah, that's right. We'd be crypto millionaires by now and the show would be self-funded for many, many years to come. But that's all right. We'll take the dollar anyway. We do need it and we do appreciate all the support that we've gotten early on in the pre-season. So that's enough for Patreon. One last thing before we head into the content, and that's Supercoach Coach League and the Supercoach Coach Group. I will post the links to that on supercoachcoach.com.au via our podcast page. Last year, our ranked leagues
did all right.
Absolutely smashed it. Yep. We had 15 of the top 20 overall. Our Patreons actually led the charge and won the 18-man league. So if you hadn't heard already, I'm sure we've been pumping it up plenty, but get involved in the community. Join up our leagues. It is a lot of fun. And the competitiveness that it breeds is a little bit different. I know when some people say they take on their mates and they're not sort of serious enough, that sometimes they're hankering for a little bit more heavy competition. And our leagues are definitely a good spot for that. And our Supercoach Coach Group, Mark, of course, we give shout outs for the top ranked player throughout the season and weekly as well. So don't forget to get involved in that so that if you do well, we'll give you a little shout out on the show. I think it's nice to keep track of the whole community in that way, Mark.
Let's get onto the rocks, buddy.
I know last week you said it was a sort of a set and forget situation, but we've had a bit of noise come out about Nick Nat that we're both massive fans of over this last week, including potential news that he might miss game one of season 2018. So I think that's opened up the rock show a little bit. I think Nick Nat and Gawn will still be sort of the headline conversations of the show. A few people flagging risks with Gawn as well in terms of durability. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the cover that's available this year, or more so the lack of it, and what that means in terms of planning for backups, especially with ruck durability being of concern in recent years. And now we only have one ruck cover, whereas, you know, a few years ago we had a couple, Mark. Actually, wouldn't mind if they brought back that second ruck cover. Obviously, keep the third midfield rookie, but having another ruck to cover that position wouldn't be too bad, I wouldn't think. Anyway, onto the rocks, Mark. So we'll start off with this first question here from Jeff Lane. Is Nick Nat safe given the lack of ruck cover? And we also had a comment from a few of our listeners saying that he's reported to miss game one. So what have you heard of that? Were we pumping him up a bit too much last week? Have you still thrown away the key and are unable to find it because it's on the ground somewhere and you're going into the season with Nick Nat locked in? Or have you reconsidered your comments from last week, Mark, about Nick Nat?
Yeah, a lot happens in a week in football, doesn't it? Look, I am definitely a lot less confident today than I was 7 days ago. That is to do with what's happening in the media. And look, I think that I've sort of discounted any talk of Nick Knapp not being ready round one. And I still am, to a certain extent. Like, I still think he'll play round one. But there's just been a little bit more information that seems to have come out that his knee may have been worse than we first thought, that he wasn't as fully recovered at the end of last year as maybe they let on. There's some rumours that he's still got a bit of knee trouble not related to the ACL, so that's what he went in for a clean-up at the end of last season, and that he's still not in full training. I would have liked him to be in full training by now. They said he's pretty much guaranteed to miss the first JLT and is highly likely to play around, unlikely to play round one if he misses the second one. So there's still a lot of ifs around that. Is he a safe pick? Definitely not, especially with lack of cover this year, given his durability concerns over the history of his career. I would like him to be 50,000 or 100,000 cheaper. I think that although you'd have to double trade to get out of that situation, I think that would lessen the risk with him a lot. But he's still sitting in my side as of now.
Yeah, Mark, I definitely agree. He's still sitting in my team just because of the upside, but very, very cold feet.
Very, very cold in a week.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't think I was quite as gung-ho as you were on Nick Nat last week.
He's rewriting history now, mate.
I was very excited because you know how much I love watching Nick Nat play, but I think I had a little bit more question marks around, you know, whether Goldstein or, you know, I get attracted by the value. So there were a few other blokes that I was considering. Not that I wasn't completely in love with Nick Nat, but it was more, I was still considering other options and I think I still am.
You do realize that people can go back and listen to what you actually said.
They absolutely could. And don't worry, Mark, I'll cut it in a way that makes me sound as good as it as I possibly can each time. I've got the editor's hand in my back pocket to play
with. That's all right, mate. As long as I don't have to edit the show, you can make me sound however you want.
I was very gung-ho on Nick Nat. I'm not backing away from that too much. But, you know, despite my excitement, I did have some personal reservations that obviously didn't delve into too deeply because it was about the first pick play and that was gone last week and both of us very much agreed on that. You know, but it's natural to want to be sure about your ruck selections. I think the imperative to get it right is very high. Last week, I think your comment was very apt when you said the rucks are often very season defining, and that's because you can get punished pretty hard if you get that part of the ground wrong. And as you alluded to last year, us nailing Witts was a big reason why our community was so far ahead of everyone else because we were so aggressive on that pick and we were so certain on that pick relative to the average community out there that because he fired, our season was really set up for success. So when you have those injury question marks over a player like Nick Nat that, as you said, ideally would be a little bit cheaper to take on that risk, you do really want to scrutinize that decision before you just commit blindly to it. And so similar to you, Mark, a little bit more nervous and a week of non-football in this case changes things pretty quickly. But having said that, you know, he plays round two of the NAB and all of a sudden, you know, he's an auto lock again, isn't he, Mark?
Whew, auto lock again. Yeah, look, I think that he is. And one of the reasons that might come up as we go through the rest of the show is actually around what's the alternative and would you be more confident with any of the alternatives?
Even though he may not necessarily start brilliantly to the season based on these concerns, he's not exactly the type of bloke who suffers when he gets on field either. Like, I remember he was playing with a groin injury, but once they decided he was good enough to get on park, he was still averaging, you know, in the 90s. He just wasn't hitting that same 110 average that we know he can. So his price means that he doesn't have to be fully fit to start the season. You just need him to be playing round one. If he's not playing round one, you're then going to have to potentially invest in a backup option at your R3, and you don't really want to be putting 200K on bench, not getting sort of full value out of that initial 100K investment. And I think we're both aligned on that and have been for quite a few years in Supercoach. You'd rather take the risk on a player who might get injured than park money on the bench in case somebody doesn't get injured because you're not even getting a shot in that instance to put those points on ground.
Yep, points on field wins you the game.
So having said that, Mark, if Nick Nat doesn't play game two and he's not listed in round one, he's for you almost a certain no starter, right?
No, definitely not. If he's not playing round one, do not pick him. Like if it was 300,000 maybe, but not at his price.
If he doesn't play round two of the JLT and he's named round one,
I'm going to have to make that decision when it comes to it. Look, I'd be 35% chance of picking him in that situation.
You'd be looking for your team structure in that case and how much money you have left, or would you be looking at the rhetoric that's coming out of the coach and the injury management at the West Coast Eagles? What would you be looking for?
That's a pretty good question. I hate to say that it'd be more than gut feel.
Cool. Hopefully we all have as good a gut feel as you have developed over the last few years.
Some things you can't actually put into words.
Yeah, it's this unmistakable intuition, right? Home through years of bad decision
making. I've studied psychology enough to know that sometimes you've just got to trust your gut and not overthink things.
I like that, Mark. I like that. No, don't sell that too much, though. Otherwise, people will start coming back. You know?
Your gut's got to be right, though.
We've got another question here from @ccurtis05 from Twitter, and it's related to Nick Nat. So, considering that Nick Nat might not be playing the JLT series and potentially might not start round one. For our second ruck, would you go for somebody who's reliable and potentially costs more money, or are you looking for value in that instance?
More money, to be honest. I don't really see the right value selection there. I know Lysette is probably one out there, and some people maybe mentioned Dawson Simpson, but yeah, no, I'd be paying full price for a fully premium ruck.
Sorry, that does lead into his next question, which is, what does that mean for our third ruck selection? What does that mean for the bench selection? Would you still in that, I suppose because you're promoting for going for a more reliable option, you'd still be in that instance looking at, you know, a cheap.
Yeah, look, my sort of philosophy around the third ruckman is probably generally to have my foot in both camps a little bit. So go for someone that is more than likely going to be used as a captain's loophole, but also has the potential to maybe play. That probably burnt me, well, probably was a couple of seasons ago where I had Darcy Cameron there and didn't end up getting a game. And yeah, that was a bit of a waste, and I probably should have just gone for the full captain's loophole there. But just with the chance of cover and hoping that it comes at the right time, and there's maybe a couple of rookies that like a reasonable chance of getting game at some stage. So I would generally go with someone that has some chance of playing.
Okay, so we'll go on to sort of ruck options now, now that we've covered Nick Nat and sort of the headline of the show following last week's episode.
It's not a 5-minute show?
A little bit. No, it's not quite. It's not quite. It shouldn't be too long, but we're going to go through a few more options than we initially thought. And the first one's Matty Cruiser, priced at 109.8. This is the absolute most that he's averaged for the season. He's also been fairly injury prone in the past, but last year managed 21 games, which is impressive for Cruiser. We've both picked Cruiser previously in Supercoach and have had one successful season doing so. Are you tempted to go back to the well with him? He's the only guy starting off averaging, you know, anywhere close to 110. Ryder being next closest at 103. He is the sole ruck at Carlton. You wouldn't think he's going backwards anytime soon. We've been all waiting for him to realize his potential. And last year was an absolute banger for him.
He's an interesting one. I think that outside of Nick Nat, there's only two players that I'm genuinely considering, and Cruiser would be one of those guys. I think that because he started the season a little bit slower, I know he had two decent scores over 100 in the first five rounds, but missed round five last year, had a 43 in round four. He averaged 117 from round seven onwards. So that shows that 109, he may even present a little bit of value still at that price. The stat that worries me a little bit is that nobody has backed up being the number one ruck since 2009 when Cox did it. And I'm not sure that Cruiser is necessarily the guy to do that. But I guess that he doesn't have to be the number one ruck this year to still turn out to be a really good pick. Like, if he goes on and averages 115 to 120, that could still be a really good result, but he could still be the second or third ruckman and average that. The pattern in the last few years, though, has been Source Jacobs or Goldstein, or there's just that ruckman really seem to spike their averages for a year and then drop back to the pack a little bit. So look, that form does worry me, but that Matty Cruiser, this has been a long time coming, like what we saw last season from him. And like, it was only him and Doherty and Simpson a bit and Mark Murphy scoring the points. And this year Doherty's gone, but Cripps might come in. I think that there's still a top end at Carlton where he's going to be a dominant player. He'll play a similar role. He's still at a good age, under 30. He's played 21 two seasons in a row. And I know that 2 years ago it was just like, let's get him through a year. And they did that. And then they built him up last year to just go that bit harder. And like, I think he can go hard again. I think at 600,000, it's a lot to put in your rucks. You're really, really investing in Matty Cruiser. But I think he's a really good, safe-ish pick. As not that safe is a word that you should really be using in the rucks.
Look, I'm less concerned about his scoring potential because, like you said, it's a long time coming. He's 29 now. It takes ruckmen a while to mature, and this is the age where they start really hitting the peak of their powers. His big sort of increase in points last year came from things that he was already exceptional at, especially for a ruckman. We're talking about points from tackling, points from clearances, which he's always been quite good at, and contested possessions. Like, he's a really good physical presence that almost plays like that extra midfielder. So I don't see that part of his game dropping off because it's something that we've always liked. My main issue is he's only played 72 matches across the last 5 years, and last year he played 21. Like, what is the likelihood of him backing up another 21-22 game season? That bit I'm more worried about. it almost feels like a lucky year in the sense of injury. I don't know if he's just been unlucky in the past. It does seem like he's a bloke that has been sort of more chronically injury prone than potentially other players.
Yeah, they're good points, and that's fair.
So that would be my only concern. Yeah. On scoring alone, you'd pick him. That price, I don't see him falling too far back. Even if he does fall back on average, maybe 105. But if Carlton midfield get better, the things that he's going to score more from are stuff like hitouts to advantage, which he was actually pretty average at last year, because Carlton aren't winning a whole bunch of the ball still at their stage of development.
If we've got no all backup right in the rocks, if you're picking someone that's a bit injury prone, like they get injured, they miss a game, you're just going to have to jump off. It might cost you points later if they come back and play really well, but it's just going to be a just burn quickly if they don't work out.
Yeah, and going back to Curtis's question from before, that's kind of a good reason why you want to be going for a more expensive
ride. It's easier to cash out.
If you invest in a mid-pricer because you're worried, exactly, you're worried about backup options, when you have to side-swap that play, if you don't have an opportunity to downgrade your rookies and upgrade that mid-pricer, you will be a lot more starved from options than when you have to get rid of Cruiser. You can pick from basically anyone because he's the most premium price ruck at the moment. All right, next question here is from Pete Weston, and this one, I'm guessing, Mark, would be another ruckman that you're considering, one of the few. No one is touching Ryder because of his price in the round 10 buy, but if you can find cover for that round 10 buy, he might be one of the better options this year. And he certainly had a sort of a quietish patch in the first half of the year compared to the second. So if he continues the form from the second half of the year, Ryder actually still presents some value, I'm like.
Look, and he's got a better midfield potentially this year, roving to him. He's got a team that would, at this stage, we're predicting might do a bit better than last year. There's a lot of reasons to be pretty excited about Paddy. He really, really worked his way well into last season, and he was just dominating games by the middle of the year and then just kept doing that for the rest of the season. I'd love to hear your round 10 solution ideas. I just don't see how you can possibly pick him when you know that because it's not best 18 during round 10 that you're going to have essentially like a 80% chance of having a donut in that spot. That's a lot of points to leave behind. Like, he's not presenting a heap of value. He could have a big season, an average 120, and then you're like, oh, damn, I wish I had picked him. But like, it'd take that to make up for the round 10 buy situation. Big line through him for me. I just don't see a good solution there that covers him in round 10.
By round 10, you could potentially have traded in a ruck forward swingman.
There's not a lot out there this year, mate.
Yeah, there's not. It's not a clean solution, but it is some sort of
and the other thing
solution
is that he hasn't played 22 games since 2011.
Look, I think I agree with you. It's very, very tough to pick him. But if we're talking about nailing the rucks being right, and if Ryder is averaging 110 for the first half of the season and nobody else is able to replicate that form, then in spite of his round 10 buy, it might be a mistake not to pick him.
Yeah, and I could understand.
Like, if you
I can understand someone making an argument that, okay, that it's like a known risk, so you know that he's going to miss round 10, but we're still talking about picking Nick Nat, where the people making this argument might say, well, he's going to miss one of those first 10 rounds and you're going to be in exactly the same situation anyway. So, look, I can understand those arguments. I guess that with Nick Nat, the unknown that it might actually work out and be okay is something that is more appealing than a known problem.
I mean, you've copped ruck donuts in the last couple of years, if memory serves me correct. Could we be in an instance where rucks just don't play 22 rounds anymore? They don't seem to be able to do that anymore. So if we're picking from ruck options that are all going to play 21 games max anyway, is picking Ryder with a known donut in round 10 the end of the world if he's going to be one of the top two options? I think you'd only consider him if you think he's going to go up.
And I think the 110 would be the absolute minimum there. I think he has to be top two rucks, 115 plus. And look, he's got that in him. He's never scored that sort of score before. But then when he was at the Bombers, he played a lot more in the forward line than he did last year. Last year, he just really played that sole ruck all year, which is how he likes it and where he's going to be getting more points from. I think, still got a line through him for me.
I agree with that. I'm just playing devil's advocate there, but it's very tough to pick a bloke where, like you said, you know you're going to have an issue with a non-playing player, whereas at least, with Nick Nat or other options, there's still some chance that they do play, 22 games.
Oh, God, that seems unlikely when you say that. Like, I don't know.
All right, on to another selection from the Lions, who's had some injury issues in the past, and that's Steph Martin. But the bigger issue with Martin is less the injury history and more the fact that he doesn't seem to be able to last 22 rounds playing as that number one ruck. So even if he gets on field, at a certain point in the year, he'll start getting on field with a backup ruckman. And that's been Archie Smith the last couple of years. So his average can really tail off very significantly when playing with an alternate ruck. We're talking, you know, to the magnitude of, you know, 30%, which throws his average down from, you know, his average 110 comfortably in the past during patches to averaging something like 80. Are you tempted at all by him, or are you past that? Are you concerned that Smith is just going to get more game time moving forward?
Where
do you sit on Steph?
Anyone that's listened to the show in the last couple of years would know that I am a very hard no on picking Steph this year. I had some amazing success with him in the past, but also been burnt incredibly badly by him. He is 32 years old this year. I don't imagine that his situation in regards to playing out the season is going to get better at that age, and I don't see him having a 110 average season where he plays 22 games this year. I just think that there's better gambles out there than Steph Martin, and surely Brisbane are going to play Archie at some point. You're obviously gambling on a lot of these selections, and I just think that there's better spots where there's potentially higher returns than Steph Martin.
I don't think I need to add much more than that. I'm pretty much aligned exactly with those sentiments, Mark. And this next bloke that we got a question from Brian Flanagan is a perfect example of a bloke who's a risk, but seems like a risk with a little bit more upside and a bit more of an unknown quantity being younger. And that's Brody Grundy. And so Brian's asked about Brody Grundy as a POD selection. And considering how we were talking about Grundy at the start of last season as a potential, you know, future star and breakout candidate, it shows how fast his star has fallen to be considering him as a POD right now, because in terms of talent and youth and durability, Grundy does tick a lot of boxes early on in his career.
It's interesting. If Mason Cox was not at Collingwood, Grundy would almost certainly be in my team. His profile is just brilliant. He's in his sixth season now. He's shown potential like really early on in his career. He's pretty durable, cops an injury every so often. He's increased his average slowly up to 97 over the last 3 years. I think that without Mason Cox there, he would comfortably average 110 plus. His possession count is insane for a ruckman compared to the other ruckman that we're talking about. But Mason Cox is there, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but Grundy's average was significantly lower, like 20 points lower with Mason Cox in the team than without Mason Cox. And I think that Mason Cox is going to play pretty regularly this year, whether that's as a mainly more of a permanent full forward or a bit in the ruck. I still think, yeah, look, Grundy's not 100% line ruled through him just because he's young, has that upside, but at the moment he would be pretty unlikely to start in my team. I reserve the right to change my mind.
Yeah, I think Mason Cox is a relevant concern. The other one for me is Collingwood a finals bound team. I think he's shown consistent enough improvement and strong enough a career trajectory. Like, he's gone from 90 to 95 to 97 as a Supercoach average, which means he's, you know, basically trending for 100 this year, all things being equal. The question for me more comes from the fact that how effectively is he going to get those hit out to advantages, get more opportunities, kicking for goal, et cetera, from Collingwood's ability to actually win games. Considering he has a second ruckman playing with him at times, I think he's done pretty well to average quite high. I mean, this is his, you know, he's in his sixth year, I believe, playing AFL. So he's shown amazing career trajectory. For me, it's, do you see Collingwood making the top eight? If they do make the top eight, I'd argue he would probably be one of the top ruck selections for the year. But I don't think, you know, we did the top eight predictions last week, Mark, and neither of us talked about Collingwood in those.
Yeah, I got a couple of Collingwood supporters, mates, that would probably disagree with that.
Yeah, no, and I think the race is wide open, and Collingwood could absolutely make the eight this year. Their talent is crazy good, and the midfield that he's tapping to is crazy good. So I see him as a risk potentially worth taking, but whether I'm sold on him now is another question. But as the options dwindle down as we get closer to the season, I would assume that Grundy's stocks rise relative to other players like Martin.
I agree with that. And if, you know, Mason Cox doesn't knee or something, not that I'm hoping that happens, he very much comes into consideration.
Oh, that make Supercoach much easier.
And like, in all seriousness, if that happened, he would probably move above Nick Nat in that case.
Oh, he might even move above Gorn.
We haven't even discussed Maxi Gorn. Like, can we just start there? Maxi Gorn is an absolute lock in position one. Like, if you don't pick him, you could be way behind the field.
We did get questions about whether or not Gorn is actually less safe of a pick than maybe even Nick Nat, because Nick Nat's managed 22 games,
honestly,
I think something like five
honestly,
times, whereas Gorn...
You don't need to fully explain that point, because it just doesn't matter. Like, his upside is so high that you just can't not pick him. At 500,000, if he plays the first seven games, he could average 130 over that period and be an extremely important player to have in your team, even though he gets injured after that. So even though he has got a pretty long history of poor durability, his upside is just so high relative to his price that you've just got to start him.
I agree. Gorn in patches averages, like you said, we're talking about 130. We're talking about rivaling Patrick Dangerfield. Gorn is almost at times a better captaincy option than any other player in the league, because when he plays against a limited ruck opposition or an inexperienced ruck opposition, you almost always give Gorn the vice captaincy or the
160,
captaincy.
160, 170 is regular basis. He seems fitter this year. Melbourne are on the improve. He's got a better midfield to tap to.
Okay, so no overthinking it. I mean, Nick Nat, maybe because of injury concerns, think about it a bit more. But Gorn, as per last week, throw away the key.
And I know that we might come across as Nick Nat fanboys, and that's fine. That's just a little bit of fun in a way. But look, Gorn, based on our experience, Gorn may turn out to be a bad pick. He may break down round two or just carry a niggle or something might not work out. But based on the law of averages and probability and a long time playing this game, you just have to start with Gorn to have a chance.
One of the golden rules when picking your Supercoach team, and it's something that you only learn after being burnt by not following this rule, is there are certain players in the game that if you miss out on them, you basically forfeit the chance to winning the game, because their upside, their scoring potential is so massive, you'd be a fool not to. We're talking Gary Ablett a few years ago when he was knocking out 130s nonstop. We're talking, you know, Patrick Dangerfield over the last couple of years. Even when Dusty Martin went on his tear at the second half of the season last year, if you weren't on that train, you pretty much could kiss that 50K goodbye, because there's so many people playing this game that you can assume that they're plenty of blokes with fairly similar team structures to yours, but they have that player that you just cannot afford to not have. And Gorn has that upside in scoring potential that if you miss out on those 160s too many weeks in the row, you're too far behind to catch up on, you know, 5-10 point gains from small upgrades to make up for that massive
gap.
Look,
I think that the other side to that is that if you start with Gorn and he doesn't work out, that's not going to cost you a chance at the 50K. But if you start with Gorn and if you don't start with Gorn and he does work out, then that will cost you a chance at the 50K.
All right. I think enough loving for Gorn. And we already talked about him a bit last week. So he's pretty much a lock for both of us. We're basically talking about the second ruck for this show. And, sometimes people want to take a punt against that, because if everyone's doing the same thing and you want to take a punt, then go for it. But your odds are very, very much lowered in that case. And you're taking a high, high risk, high reward pick. But like you said, Mark said, you can sort of count yourself out of contention if he fires. And there's a good chance that he does. All right. Next question here is from Simo at ReedySimo1 from Twitter. Thoughts on Jacobs? His consistent score over the years. Adelaide has a strong midfield. And as we've really appreciated in seasons past, I think a couple of years ago, Mark, we picked Jacobs to great effect because of his ability to get on park. One of the best in the comp in terms of durability.
Yeah,
and
I think there was a few reasons for picking him at that time. But it was awesome because he used to actually get possessions, but he doesn't do that so much anymore. And the points for hitouts to advantage has reduced over time, and that does seem to have affected him. He's one that, because of his durability, you could pick him and it could work out okay. I know people that did pick him last year and it worked out okay. They had reasonably successful seasons. He could pull one out of the bag. He could have 115 season. I'd say that that's unlikely personally. And I think that you're probably capped at about 100. I don't really see him going a lot above that. He's not someone that I'm looking at all this year. What do you reckon?
I think about 4 years ago, when he lifted his average from 85 to 115, is when they really gave that massive boost to points for hitouts to advantage. And as you mentioned, they did sort of reverse half of that a couple seasons ago, and that coincided with his drop from 107 to 87. Last year, Adelaide had a very strong season, and he only finished with an average of 97. He's 30 years old now. He's a known quantity. Durability is his main upside, and I don't think you want to be picking a bloke purely on durability. The equation was a little bit different when we were looking at him as a 26-year-old, Mark.
When we used to play with, I think we had 20 trades when we started this game, something like that might be something you take into consideration. But with 30 trades, you can take a few more risks.
All right, next question here is from Troy Rodney. Hey, boys, great to be back for 2018. Thank you, Troy. He's considering Ben McAvoy as his first ruck. Low ownership, which will mean he's a bit of a POD. Averaged 95 last year. Thoughts on him as a selection? When he was playing at St Kilda, we were a bit more tempted, but since crossing over to Hawks, he really hasn't factored into fantasy or Supercoach equations very much. Could this year be different? 22 games last year, which is definitely a plus.
This is going to sound very dismissive, but not considering him, no. And look, at times in patches last year, he was really, really good. And coaches that had him were very, very happy with that. But there were also quieter patches. And that's pretty much been the pattern of his career at Hawthorn. So I don't see any reason why there would be a significant change to that. So no for me.
I agree with that. I think fairly similar to the Jacobs selection there. Durability is the main plus side, but he's a fairly known quantity now and not particularly exciting as a selection. He could very much just stay at the 95 average, and although you wouldn't consider that a hole in your team, it wouldn't be a winning selection either, and we try and pick winning selections where we can. All right, the next question here is from Jared Smith. After the article about Goldstein the other day, where I was talking about his struggles with, leaving his partner and the mother of his kids, and struggling with it sounded a bit like depression or just feeling quite down and disenchanted with the game, to now feeling like he's got that passion back. And he was the premier ruck before Gorn came about. We've seen him have an absolutely monstrous season before, where if you didn't have him, you basically didn't have a chance that year. Could he return to those heights, because he's priced attractively enough to potentially take the risk?
Yeah, so out of the options that I was talking about before, that the two options that I'm considering, Goldstein is actually one of them. And it's only the second time in seven seasons that he's averaged under 100 or under 105. So that is not numbers that any other ruckman can claim. And despite all his struggles last year, and despite the fact that he ended up having to get dropped to the VFL, he still averaged 95, still had some good seasons. I think I brought him in at one point, though, and he, that didn't work out so well. He does have a fair bit of upside. Now, look, this is really a question of will they play Proust and Goldstein in the same team? And the answer to that, it'd be like the Mason Cox Grundy thing, but probably even worse, I think. If the answer to the question is that they will play Proust, and seeing him in the AFLX on the weekend, he looked like he's in very good shape. My answer to the question is I don't think that they can. They have Ben Brown already. He's too obvious an option as a second ruck. Like, Essendon would rather Joey Danaher play in the forward line all year, but we're not going to play two rucks plus Joey Danaher. It's just way too much height on the field. And I think that as much as North might like that decision to be different and they want to give Proust game time, I just don't think that they're going to be able to play Proust, Brown and Goldstein all together and have a successfully functioning forward line and ruck line. So for me, that makes Goldstein and the article that came out the other day makes him a relevant option. He provides a lot of value, and he may turn out, he's the sort of guy that in 8 weeks' time we turn around and go, wow, he was a super obvious pick at his price.
I agree with that. So I think of all the blokes we've talked about, he's the one that's most attractive to me at the moment. Sounds pretty similar to yourself, Mark. He averaged 127 2 years ago,
Good as well.
That's massive. That is true. But 127 is freaking massive. He averaged the most Supercoach points that year, more than a midfielder, any other midfielder. So even if he doesn't get back to those heights, even if a bloke is stealing points off him, even if North end up with the wooden spoon, he could still comfortably average 105. And
that'd be a really good result if he played even 21 games.
Absolutely. If you could get a 10-point increase on his price and he potentially comfortably sits in the top two, top three rucks. Like you said, he seems like a very obvious selection. A lot of ifs and buts at this early stage of the season. It's hard to have confidence after a bloke has continued to slide the last two seasons, but in terms of upside, in terms of potential value, in terms of an ability to be an absolute premium ruck scoring option, there's not too many blokes that we've talked about so far that can rival him. And the next option that we're going to, or the next few players that we're going to, drop off fairly steeply from these premium options that we've already covered so far. All right, let's move on to the more mid-price selections now. And so we're going to fire these off fairly more rapid fire because, as we've touched on before, from a strategic point of view, it doesn't make as much sense to take a risk on these blokes unless you're very sure that they have a chance of breaking out to be, you know, a Goldstein Grundy type candidate. So we'll fire them off pretty quickly. The first one here is from Lincoln Beggs asking about Zach Smith being a genuine option or not. We got a few people asking about him as well. Geelong have a strong midfield, plenty of people who are going to win those hitouts to advantage. And Smith is consolidated himself as the number one ruck now. Yay or nay?
That's a you question, mate.
501,000, average 91 last year. Hard to see him breaking 100, so he seems like a fairly comfortable nay selection for me. Next question is about Toby Nankervis. He's potentially a bit more attractive at a similar price point, 488, but last year showed great scoring potential, averaging 110 for the start of the season, but really dropping off as the impact of being number one ruck took its toll as the year progressed. He eventually needed the support of Ivan Soldo, and that did not help things. That only made things worse in terms of Supercoach scoring, but has shown that premium scoring potential previously.
I just think awkwardly priced if he was a lot cheaper, maybe. I think that he may turn out to be a decent pick. He's certainly got the potential. He could work out to be quite a good pick one day. I'm not sure that this is the time.
Goldstein being 35K more, like, surely you can't be taking Nank. Next question is from Brandon Craghill, and so now we're going into a bloke that's quite a lot cheaper and so potentially a bit more of a potential option. Tom Hickey, is he a chance of finding his previous form? There's a lot of teams in the comp that are struggling to select their number one ruck, and St Kilda have definitely been a victim of that in seasons past. You'd think if they start pushing for the finals that they might try and settle that down, but between Billy Longa and Hickey, that fight has been continuous for years. Since Long has come over. What are your thoughts on Hickey? 327K, only played the five games last year. Potential.
You'd need a Saints fan to answer it better than me, but the ongoing job security, injury history, never scored premium numbers for a long period of time. That's enough to be a no.
I think his previous high was a average of only 88, so not that brilliant scoring potential to begin with. A lot of people are looking to recreate the Witt scenario as the last year, but we picked Witt knowing he was, and we picked Witt knowing that he was number one ruck, whereas, you know, with Hickey, that's certainly far from the case. Next question here is from David Sabo. Dawson Simpson, would you select him at all? 290K. GWS look like they don't even have a ruckman on their list apart from Rory Lobb, but he's available as a forward. Do you see Simpson finally getting some games as a regular?
I don't really. I think that there's some chance that he'll be picked round one, but I think that that's a fair bit of a trap. So Lobb has some groin injuries that he's had over the last couple of years, and they're just sort of, from what I can read, easing him back into training or easing him back into games. And there's some chance that Lobb misses round one, but geez, you'd hate to pick Simpson on field. Lobb comes back round two or three and Simpson gets dropped and you've got a 290K ruckman that you cannot do anything with sitting there. That would be a disastrous situation.
Kane White's asking about Scott Lissette. Has previously averaged 83, presents value at 277, but again, that similarly awkward price bracket. And with Nick Nat coming back this year, you wouldn't assume that the equation gets better.
The interesting proposal would be, what if Nick Nat really didn't look likely to be going early in the year? Does Lysette become a better pick? And I guess that he probably does at that price. That's where he would be someone that may open up. The door is unlikely to open for Lysette, but it's not completely closed either. I'd struggle to pick him as a second ruck. In the rucks, there's so many points available if you get it right that you just don't want to be picking someone that's a second stringer.
For me, more to the point is the downside of getting it wrong is a lot higher. Lysette, as a forward line player, is potentially more attractive than just a ruck. If he's a ruck forward, the equation changes a little bit. But as a pure ruck, if he gets dropped early on, round five, without having the proper chance to increase or appreciate in price, and he's your second ruck, like, you have to side swap him to another mid-pricer or downgrade a a rookie off only two price increases in order to get him out of your team to a premium. So that's kind of the problem with an awkwardly priced R2. You need to have some confidence that they're going to play on a consistent basis. All right, so that covers most of the options. And with that, that's probably the end of the Ruck Show, Mark. Do you have anything else to add before I head into the wrap-up? So don't forget supercoachcoach.com.au. Together with this podcast, I'll be posting the league registration link and the Supercoach Coach group invite. I'll also start posting open league codes. So if you're looking just to join a casual league, because our community is so awesome, they still tend to smash it and comfortably sit in the top 100 most of the time. Most of our leagues are top 100 or top 200 leagues, which is amazing considering a lot of these are open leagues. So I'll start posting those codes out. So if you're keen to get involved in a competitive league, if you need to, you know, you got 10 league spots. If you need to leave a league to join ours, definitely do that. And don't forget patreon.com/supercoachcoach. Next week, Mark, next easiest position on ground, probably the midfield. That's where we'll head. Any objections to that?
Let's go there, mate, but it doesn't sound very easy at all.
No. I mean, forwards and defenders don't look much easier, unfortunately.
It's a bit like the opposite of the ruck situation. We're actually spoiled for choice in the midfield.
Yeah. At least they're a bit more of a known quantity. So that's where we'll be heading back.
Let me get the preview for next week's show wrong like I did last week. Next week's show where we recommend to pick every single midfielder because they're all awesome.
All right. And with that, this is Captain Hindsight signing off, and FB Donkey, and we'll catch you all next week. See ya. Don't want to get crazy. Don't want to get crazy. Let's get crazy.